Hi, I'm Kathleen O'Connor, and you're listening to the Breffni Early Show.
Breffni, you come all the way from Ireland for this adventure.
Isn't Breffni Early a real tonic, full of positivity?
It's an amazing story, Breffni, with a wonderful, happy ending.
All of those things on your bucket list though, wouldn't necessarily have led you to do the World Cycle Race.
27 countries, 490 days. 18,000 miles on a bike.
You've decided that's it. You've got to keep giving yourself challenges.
Welcome to the 10th episode of the Breffni Early Show, where each week we bring you an in-depth conversation with someone who is interesting, inspirational, and motivational. And this week is absolutely no exception to that. I'm delighted to welcome my neighbour, Kathleen O'Connor, to the show. Kathleen, welcome.
Thank you very much, Breffni. Thank you for having me.
I've been aware of who you are since I grew up, because at the age of 4, I was in school with one of your 9 children. I would have been aware of you at birthday parties and things, but it's probably the first time we've actually sat down and had a conversation. Another thing I would have been aware of over the years was when I was a very young child, probably in my early teens, you were diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And we're going to talk a bit more about your diagnosis in due course, but I want you to tell me a bit about yourself as a young girl growing up in Carrick and Shannon. What was life like for you?
Well, life in Carrick and Shannon, it was very different from life at the minute now. Back then, you went to town once a week, got your weekly messages. You worked on the farm. My parents had a farm. And your outings, really, your big outing was your communion and your confirmation, and maybe you had a party. The teacher would bring us for a little party after, for some big occasion, maybe when you were leaving sixth class or something like that.
So a very typical rural Irish upbringing. You obviously, you fell in love, you had a husband, you had children, had a family, and life was going pretty well for you. And then let's talk about 1995. You've got 9 kids. The youngest is less than a year old.
The youngest is less than a year old.
And your life pretty much took a very different tangent.
It did, Breffni. I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. And it was Dr. Murphy was my neurosurgeon at the time in Dublin. He gave me the news. And he said, go and have an easy life. And I was totally brokenhearted. I was devastated. I remember he said, oh, there's a doctor on call now if you want to have any questions. And I just went back into bed, slept for hours. And then I got up and I crawled out to the washing basin and realised I wasn't dead. So I looked at myself and I said, there's nothing really wrong with me, but I have the label now. I had MS. And it's kind of relieving in a way to be diagnosed as having something, because before that, various things would happen and I had no reason, you know, or nothing. I could have had motor neuron, or I could have had a stroke, but I didn't know what.
For the benefit of the listeners and for myself, can you tell me maybe a little bit about MS and some of the symptoms that you would have been having at the time?
Well, MS is a neurological disease of the brain, and it's the brain and spinal cord. There's little nerve messages that go through your body to do the various different functions. And it's like little plaques that grow on it. Like, you can imagine little lines with rust spots on it. And if the rust is there, the message won't get across. So if I went out for a walk, and I was very interested in marathons and walking and fitness and all that, but if I went out for a walk, I mightn't be able to get back. I might have to get somebody to leave me home, or various things. I might start laughing at something that wasn't funny, but something would come into my mind. It's your subconscious mind would affect you as well. And I used to wonder why these things were happening. So just to put the label on it and say that you had a miss, it was kind of relieving, really, in one sense.
In terms of the impact that would have on your life, in the short term, so the diagnosis was made 21 years ago in 1995, what would the effects have been, say, in the first year of your diagnosis? What kind of changes would you have had to make in your daily life?
Well, just the basic things of just walking. I remember you just get so fatigued, is that you just, your muscles collapse and you're just not able to walk. I was using a rollator for a while, and eventually then I got the wheelchair, because I suppose you have so much to get through and get done, and you ignore what you're not able to do, and you speed up with the wheelchair, and you think you're getting more done then. So
I have memories of you when I was maybe a young teenager, 15, 16 years of age, watching you on the street, and you would see you out and about, very involved in the community, but out and about on a mobility scooter. How big a part has technology played in your treatment?
Well, technology really is important. The freedom of the mobility scooter is to be able to go out there on your own and do your own thing, really, and be capable of doing it. Because if you're in the wheelchair and you could fall forward and you have no protection, whereas in the mobility scooter you're protected, the sides and the armrests, the back, and you can't fall forward. So once you're put in the even at this stage, the fact that I'm paraplegic, it doesn't make any difference. If somebody puts me in the wheelchair, in the mobility scooter, I'm fine. I can mosey around and do the bits I want myself.
In terms of the practicalities of that, say, for example, as most people do on plenty of times during the week, decide they want to go to the shop to pick up something simple, like a newspaper. What's involved in you going to collect it? Because I know you seem like a very independent woman, and you would much prefer to do that yourself than have someone do that for you.
My day would start off with an hour. It takes me an hour. I have to be hoisted out of bed. I have to be hoisted into my mobility scooter. And then I can go off and I can go to the shop and I can pick out stuff in the shop or ask. Like, everybody kind of knows, if I can't reach to stuff, there'll be somebody I can ask them. I have no problem ask it for help. And I think that that comes from all the help I got from my family, because they were very supportive all the time, and they always were there for me. So if it's anything in that sense, it leaves me very independent, that I can go from one thing to another. And once I have assistance or a personal assistant, it's perfect.
When situations like that occur in people's lives, and they get a diagnosis of MS or motor neuron disease, some people kind of retreat into themselves and become very insular and become very cut off and isolate themselves from other people and get very depressed. How have you managed to not let that happen to you? Because
I suppose you have to decide. I decided I'd fight back, because you know, when I was diagnosed, I overheard various conversations and people would say, oh, what will they do with her now? And, you know, how is she going to manage with the big family and all that kind of thing? And I just took each day as it came, and I kind of worked my way through it, really, that there's no point in being depressed about it. You just, the next day is the next day, and you just start your work and do it to the best of your ability. And where you want help, just ask for help, and you'll find that people are very generous. I always found that whatever I'm doing myself, I've no problem asking, and I get the help I need.
I'm flabbergasted by how positive you take the whole experience, especially a lot of people, 9 children from 16 down to 6 months, that have been diagnosed with MS. I think it's remarkable the outlook you have on that, and so congratulations on that. Thanks. 21 years later.
Thanks, Brefty.
But it's a huge... I love hearing positive news stories. I know the listeners listen to this show to hear positive and to be inspired and to be motivated. And I'm pretty sure that however long this goes on, that people are going to just sit there and go, wow, that woman is amazing. I want to talk about 2012. And you were awarded... a pretty special...
Oh, yes, I got the Inspirational Person of the Year Award from the Rehabilitation Centre. And, well, to this day, I don't know who nominated me, but I was very honoured to get it. And also my family were delighted, so...
I'm not going to let you just gloss over that and get out of it in 30 seconds.
Well,
Tell me a bit more about the award.
It was for doing exceptional things in your community. And I've been a member of various organisations, the Credit Union, People with Disabilities Ireland. Now that's no longer, but it was a great organisation. It was from grassroots up. And then the Centre for Independent Living, we set about setting that up. And that's now LAPWD, Leitrim Association of People with Disabilities. And then I worked, set up another company for SIPTU. It was Leitrim Resource Centre in Mull. Now there were 10 of us in the setting up of that. And it was just for, there was a recession on at the time and people were in dire straits, you know. So we photocopied stuff for them and got their CVs ready and got them ready for work, that sort of thing, preparation. So
yeah, it's again,
then I was with the Wheelchair Association, did volunteer work, traveled a good bit for them.
How tough is travel in your situation?
Oh, travel is no problem at all, because you get assistance at airports. And yeah, like well, say the train now, if I'm traveling to Dublin by train, I just tell them the day before and they put down the ramp and take out a ramp and have it ready for me. And you just get aboard the train, same as anyone else. Your seat is there and there's no problem then getting you off. The checker on the train will help you out. And the same when you're, if you have stuff to get, that will help you. You'll always get a cup of tea and that sort of thing. You know?
In terms of the supports that are available for someone in your position, obviously you mentioned you've got a big family, but they all have their own lives and they're all got busy and they're all over the place. How or what supports are available for you for so that you are independent doing these things, not relying on your family members?
Well, I suppose it's the empowerment, and I suppose what do you call it? I'm an MSSOC, Master of Social Science, and I suppose I'm independent, that I do all these things. If I ask for something, it's acceptable now. Whereas, you know, when I was diagnosed years ago, there wasn't an understanding of that you could be, you know, you could have your brain and still, you know, be immobile. And usually people would say to you, oh, why would you be bothered doing this? Or why would you be bothered doing that? But it's, you know, a certain amount of things you want to do, but you can't do it without help of a personal assistant. And in the combination of that, that's what makes life easy.
Yeah. You mentioned technology in terms of the hoist and the mobility scooter, and you're sitting surrounded by laptops and all sorts of technology. When I came into your home this morning, you managed to open the door without leaving the seat, which is a fantastic facility for you to be as normal can be in your situation. But there's one piece of technology that you're very excited about at the moment, and you've set up a project called Step West, which is to bring an exoskeleton to the west of Ireland. Tell me a little bit about, first of all, what an exoskeleton is and the effect that it has on people in your situation.
Well, an exoskeleton is a suit that you put around. It's kind of a vest that you put on over your clothes, and the bars down to your feet is no, it's no thicker than the bar of the wheelchair. So I heard of this groundbreaking work from Mark Pollock, and I kind of thought, first of all, maybe, you know, it's a bit airy-fairy and all the rest of it. And we just discussed among ourselves what was going on and what they were doing with the exoskeleton. And then I said, my family said, you know, go ahead and investigate it. And I'm doing a PhD now. And when you do, you have to find something out there that hasn't already been dealt with or written about or whatever. So in order to do my thesis, the exoskeleton was the bit of research that I needed to do. So then I went down to the Elite Gym in Cork. Now, this is an ordinary gym. It's run by Colm O'Shaughnessy. And it means that you can go in there. Actually, Nathan Kerwin was the instigator of having the exoskeleton there. Now, you just go in and the physiotherapist measures you up, your width and your height, and suits you to the exoskeleton. And that's, you're encased in this then, and you just stride along, take your steps. And now there's a little backpack on it, and that's recording all the different motions that you're making. So really, when you're ready to move your hip or your leg or your knee, it's moving with you, you know, and you're sending back the signal. So the physiotherapist won't make you do what you're not, your body isn't telling you to do. So both are in sync with each other. Now, the other thing about it is that you won't, in my first movement was 10 steps, and my hamstring wasn't in place, or it wasn't prepared for it. So really, a person that's sitting in a wheelchair, you know, or if you're sitting doing exercise, you're not exercising properly because you're not stretching your muscles and you're not stretching. Whereas when you're standing and in the walking position, I really feel that walking should be one of these rights that it's a human right, really, that you should be able to walk. Now, most people take walking for granted, but there's so many people, so many of us that can't do it, you know. So
the image in my head, and it's a little bit down to Hollywood these days, is of Iron Man.
Oh, right.
Where you got this suit and you can walk, and obviously he has superpowers when he puts a suit on, but in just terms, your superpower is just the ability to walk again. As you mentioned, people take it for granted. What's the effect that taking those steps had on you mentally?
Oh, it's absolutely amazing, really, because first of all, you know, you're absolutely elated that you're walking, and you just want to keep going on. And then, you know, in the back of your mind, you're saying to yourself, oh, imagine if this is doing my arm, or your brain is kind of, you know, holding you back and saying, you know, now stop, you've done enough. But I was
something
lucky.
Tells me you don't struggle with that problem with your brain ever telling you.
Well,
you've done
the brain is the one that keeps pushing me all the time. But I was able to do 100 steps, and I intend to go and do more. And now for investigating it would be great to have it near, have the exoskeleton in the West, where we could monitor people with stroke, multiple sclerosis, anyone in a wheelchair, if you could monitor them and do a case study on how they're developing and what good it's doing. And
we're going to come to the campaign to bring an exoskeleton to this area, of the northwest of Ireland or the west of Ireland in a couple of minutes in the interview. But first, I want to talk more about the actual process that's involved and really the benefits of why it's good for people. Because did you think maybe 10 years ago, say mid-noughties, that you would ever take a single step? Never mind saying I took 100 steps.
Oh, no. Once you think you're in a wheelchair, you lose interest. And you never dream that you would be able to walk 100 steps, be it with the aid of the exoskeleton or not. And I think that's the most devastating thing. You're just inclined to stay put and stay in your wheelchair, and you don't see what's out there. And there's not enough, you know, medicine and technology has moved on so much, even in the last 10 years, that people don't realise what is there.
In terms of Mark Pollock, and I know he's done a fantastic work in this area, particularly in publicising it, bringing it to the attention of people like yourself. He's gone, I think he's nearly hit 1 million steps at this stage. It's something astronomical. And he thinks maybe bigger than just walking. Does that translate to you as well? Do you think maybe, you mentioned marathons, but is there a dream in there maybe of walking a 5K at some stage in one of these? Where does it end for you?
Well, the marathon is the 55,000 steps. And I was thinking, first of all, in doing fundraising for this exoskeleton, I thought, wouldn't that be a nice way to do, get someone to sponsor me for the 55,000 steps? And there we had the exoskeleton. But since that, an awful lot have rallied round to do marathons for me, there's an Ironman run, and then there's lots of things really in the pipeline. And I also hope to do an auction in September. So I'd be appealing to your listeners to help in any way they can. Give something to the auction, come to the auction, you know, help out, you know, any way they can, really.
This campaign that you're undergoing, that we've referred to a couple of times without specifically getting into it, is Step West. And primarily it's run through social media, if I'm not
mistaken. It's run through social media, yes.
So people type in Step West into Facebook, they'll find your page, all the information about it. But you're aiming to raise a considerable amount of money to get this service available in the west of Ireland. So yes. Tell us about what the dream is.
Well, I started with a fundraiser in the Christmas markets. And that was 2 days. We set up a stall and we met all the people and explained what the bionic exoskeleton suit was. And people were amazed to think that it was available, because now, for the first time in the history of assisted movement since the wheelchair, there's another option, and that's the bionic exoskeleton suit is out there.
You gave me a few notes this morning when I came into your home, and one of the quotes that I take from, actually there's two quotes that really strike me, but for you it's, for me it's not about walking, it's about seeing things from a different angle, feeling whole again. That's a pretty big statement.
Well, when you're sitting roughly in a wheelchair, you're only 4 inches or 4 foot off the ground, and your whole life and your whole perspective is seen from that angle. Now, when you change and that you can be 5 foot plus and that you can see people eye to eye, I find it very intimidating if someone is talking to you and they'll be saying, oh, does she eat this, or will she have a cup of tea? You know, you find like people don't talk directly to you. They're talking at you. So
there, if you're one of your daughters or sons are with you, they'll ask them about you.
Yes, rather than asking me what I want, you know. So that's the and it's no fault of you know, an able-bodied person to do that, because they're on a level. But when you're sitting down, you're always looking across your shoulder or looking up or whatever. You just can't see them face to face the right way.
In terms of the cost of this, it's €150,000 is the budget that's going to cost to get one of these available. Why isn't that coming from government funds? Why isn't that coming from the HSE?
Well, I suppose we won't go into the HSE now because they have lots of problems as it is. But I suppose the way the politicians now have said, we had a big campaign there for, they were going round from door to door, and I've been speaking to all of them really, and the price is to get the exoskeleton and get the medical card on need, and they assure me now that they'll do their best. So
a politician made a promise.
Yes,
you can be sure that's going to happen next week.
Hopefully.
In terms of the population that this would serve, and many people in the west of Ireland could benefit from having this.
Oh, everybody in a wheelchair, from Donegal, Leitrim, Sligo, Longford, all the west of Ireland. I even have some lady down in Clare, and she's spreading the word for me down there. It's just, if you got your physio walk for 2 to 3 days a week, maybe for 10 to 15 minutes, it just conditions your body. Your bone density, your muscle would be improved. It just your overall health, and for mental health it would be brilliant as well, because you're interactive and you're motivated. You're out there in an ordinary gym. I'd prefer to have it away from the clinical setting. I'd prefer to have it either in a hotel clinic for a day, or in a gym, or a community centre maybe. If I had my way, it would be in every nursing home in Ireland. Now, you find people are drugged and given loads of medicine to put them to sleep. But if a person had a physio walk for 10 to 15 minutes, they'd be tired after it, and there'd be no need to give them sleeping tablets. So I envision that in the future, an exoskeleton won't be a novelty. It will be a reality for everybody.
In the end, it comes back to actually treating people as people, not patients.
Exactly.
That's the second quote that I picked out of your notes that I really like. What's the progress to date? So 150,000 is the target. You've really just started in the last...
I've just started in the last 3 months, and we have lots of... propositions, you know, for marathons, and there's people, musicals, and there's one lady doing a vintage run for me. Like that again, there's an Ironman, a muck run. I don't know many more different things that are the
individual people individual, who want to help.
Yes. So I'd imagine that with your listenership, and that, you know, if anyone wants to get involved, just to contact your show and just say what they can do, if they can help with the auction, if they can help in any way, it would be appreciated.
Yeah, no, I think the first point of contact really is to contact you directly,
right,
rather than coming through me. But I'm more than happy to take any calls or any queries that anyone has and put them in touch with you. But if they just look up Step West on Facebook, they'll find your page, which I think is... I like it. It's been something I've been aware of since it started, and I think it's a testament to you that you've managed to grow it to what it is at the moment. You're just shy of €5,000 raised. And obviously that leaves a long way to go, but pretty sure with the support that you've had so far.
Well, I want to thank the support that I've got from all the donations that I've got, and I also want to thank Johnny Byrne for his mentoring for my Facebook page. And I also want to thank the Leitrim Enterprise Centre for their help and support. And I also want to thank you, Breffni, for this interview.
No problem. My pleasure. I know I bumped into one of your children 2 weeks ago, and they suggested I have a chat with you. And immediately I thought, why didn't I think of her beforehand? And I know there's been two or three of them in contact with me trying to set up this chat, and I'm delighted to come in and have a conversation with you today. Normally, we finish the show with one specific question. But to be honest, you've probably dealt with it already in terms of the content of the last 5-10 minutes in particular. But I'm going to ask it anyway, and it's if the listeners of the show can do one thing for Kathleen O'Connor or Step West, what would you like them to do? If you had one ask of everyone who's listening to this right now, what would you ask them to do for you?
I would ask them to either contact me about the exoskeleton. I can give them any information they want to hear about it. I've got plenty of phone calls, and I notice one particular lady wanted to know, could she get one for herself? So
if you've got 150 grand, yes.
If you have 150 grand, that's my target, and I'm not going to finish until I get it. So hopefully that everybody out there can help me.
That's fantastic. Kathleen O'Connor, it's been an absolute pleasure to spend the half hour with you. Thank you very much for being on the show.
Thank you very much, Breffni.